All right, folks, welcome to the Beyond the Resume podcast brought to you by Jackson Lucas. I'm Chris Papa.
And I'm Lisa Flicker.
And today we spoke with Mr. Michael Nachampkin. Michael is a longtime industrial real estate veteran. He's currently an advisory board member to Altman Logistics Properties and runs his own shop, Metrics Real Estate Partners Services, He worked at HFF, he worked at Prologis, he worked at Whitehall Funds, if any, you know, any of our older listeners remember Whitehall. But he started kind of at the beginning, I feel like, of right before industrial real estate became institutional. What did you think, Lise?
Yes, I think it's really interesting to see how he kind of grew with the industry. And, you know, I'm always a fan of somebody whose wife is kind of the wind beneath their wings. I love that his wife who taught him what commercial real estate was.
Yeah. He studied music. So I love having like diverse backgrounds of folks in here and what they studied in college and stuff. And he studied music, and he actually, you know, if you listen to the end, he plays this out with the beautiful Gershwin piece. But yeah, how did someone who studied music get into commercial real estate and become a very successful real estate investor? You will find out. And so with that, enjoy the week. All right, Michael, welcome to the podcast. It's nice to see you again.
You too.
So Michael, Lisa, Michael is part of our Montclair State University Real Estate Board. That's how we met. But you're based in New Jersey. You have a long history in real estate. I think you're an advisory board member at Altman Logistics Properties. You're managing partner at Metrics Real Estate Services. Spent many years at HFF. So yeah, I mean, long history, I think mainly in industrial real estate. So you've seen it come from like kind of the backwaters to the beautiful belle of the ball now, right?
Exactly. I'm actually this year, 2024, is 40 years in this business.
Since you've been born?
I'm sorry?
Since you've been born?
Since I've been born, yes.
Right. You look so good.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Yeah,
I would have guessed.
40 years of industrial real estate and some, you know, other versions.
I feel like you could probably write a book. I mean, I remember when it started to get institutionalized and, you know, you had the folks who had the boots in the back of their truck, and then you had the folks that had the three-piece suit and the laptop computer, and we were trying to merge them together, and it's been an interesting ride.
Yeah, when I started, there was just, you know, notebooks, index cards, Rolodexes, no computers.
Same.
No cell phones.
How did you end up? So, I mean, Lisa always likes to tell the story when we, you know, years ago, she would recruit for industrial jobs, and the office investment folks would be like, no way, I'm doing industrial. And now they're like begging to get into industrial. How did you end up in like, at the time, like, I guess a very niche asset class?
Well, I blame my wife, actually.
Mm, yeah.
On this one?
Well, blame sounds so negative.
It's a very good. I credit.
You owe it to her.
I owe it.
Credit your wife.
I owe it to credit her. But when I met Julie, I was in a different business for 7 years outside of real estate. And I was basically selling chemicals and specialty gases to make semiconductors and printed circuit boards back in the 70s. Huh. I was a salesman, basically. And I met my wife. She was at Cushman & Wakefield in research.
Oh, yeah.
She was telling me about commercial real estate and brokers and how much money they made and all this things. And I was like, what is commercial real estate? And one thing led to another after being a frustrated salesperson, traveling a lot and selling more, getting paid less.
Mm-hmm.
I went and looked into the commercial real estate business. And my very first job was at Coldwell Banker Commercial Real Estate. Cushman & Wakefield wouldn't hire me because I didn't have any real estate experience, even though Julie was working there. So I was there a year. And then she became a broker, and the head of the office told her to bring me in. He says, I'll hire Michael also. We'll make it a two.
There you go.
We'll make it a 2-4. So she was an office leasing broker. And since I came out of industry, basically, I like the industrial business. So that's how I started my industrial real estate career in 1983 and 84.
Dang.
How has it changed? I mean, I can only imagine what you've seen.
Oh, my God. It's crazy because for decades, it never changed. So, you know, from the 80s to the 90s to the, you know, to the mid 2000s to, you know, to just 5 years ago, you know, rents were relatively stable. The business was just kind of like being a turtle. It was just slow going, you know, take your time. It was, you know, it was rewarding for a lot of people in the business, but not to the extent that has been in the past 5 years. You know, buildings changed, land prices changed. What stayed consistent, though, were owners of real estate for decades, mostly private families.
Mm.
And that all changed, I would say, in New Jersey. When I got into the institutional real estate business, when I left brokerage in 1995, I started the Security Capital Industrial Trust business, which became Prologis.
Wow. Okay.
And I was, I would say, if not the first, one of the very first institutional developers of real estate in New Jersey. Most of it was private families. And then, you know, once everybody saw what Security Capital was doing, they all kind of followed, and everybody else, you know, came in from the outside.
Wow.
Yes.
And then,
and that would have been in, you know, between 1995 and 2000, when the institutional market really changed.
And then you were at Whitehall, which is, I mean, they were big at the time. Whitehall Funds.
Yeah, that was the Blackstone of the day. Blackstone was actually a pretty small company. I think they were around, but the go-to group was Goldman Sachs, and they snatched me out of Security Capital to start Whitehall Industrial Properties. So we formed a company together, which they funded, and we had a great run for about 6.5 years.
Were you there when they were? So were they being run by Goldman Sachs at the time, or were they bought by Goldman Sachs?
Whitehall Funds was part of Goldman Sachs. It was just another fund for principals and employees and institutional investors to invest in real estate. There were 7 funds,
right?
If I recall, and they carved out $75 million for me to start my company.
Cool.
Yeah, that was those were exciting times. 1999 to 2005 were rock and roll days.
It must have been just like a untapped landscape out there, and like not much competition as far as institutional capital, right?
Well, it was really interesting because people were like, well, how are you going to start this business? And I was like, well, the first thing is when you say Goldman Sachs, you don't have to worry about, you don't have the money. You're well it's a well-recognized name. We named it Whitehall Industrial Properties because the Whitehall name was very well known.
Right. I remember Whitehall Funds. Yeah, that was like, I got in this business in 04. So Whitehall was like the spot.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was a really good time. I had a great board. My partners over there were fantastic. And we did well. We did well when some of the other sectors in the market weren't doing well. Even for us low industrial guys.
Which you can't possibly think that way anymore.
No.
But then I get.
But the one thing I can say is in all the decades of being in the industrial real estate business, personally, I've never lost money for investors or myself because it's been a very good performer over a long period of time. as opposed to retail and office, and even less so on multi.
Right.
So it's been a very good sector to be in.
What are the trends right now in the industrial sector? Like, it feels like, what are people targeting now? I feel like there's a lot of, I don't know if you know, a lot of iOS stuff is new.
It's really not new.
Well, new acronym.
Yeah, it's a new acronym that's been around for a long time, but except that, you know, once you run out of being able to acquire buildings, the next thing is, you know, what's the next best thing? And that's sell outside storage. So I don't know if it was brokers that coined the phrase or institutionals, but somebody came up with iOS.
Right.
It became the rage.
Right. All of a sudden it has a brand and everybody wants to be a part of it, right?
It's crazy because it really added no value for forever up until recently. You weren't really paying for extra land that came with the building.
So before you got into real estate, was it something that what did you think you wanted to grow up and become? Was it sales?
He wanted to be a chemical salesperson.
Actually not. I have a degree in music. I studied piano.
Oh, wow.
As you can see in my background here.
Beautiful.
Oh, yes, so did he.
Yeah. So I studied piano in college.
Wow.
I went to a music school in Ohio University, and I thought I was going to teach music, either secondary education or higher education. And when I graduated from Ohio University School of Music in 1976, my best job offer was for a teaching job in, I think it was Wisconsin or Minnesota, at like $6,000 a year. And I'm like, not happening.
Right.
And that literally changed my mind on what direction I was going to go in. Because I was like, I can't make a living doing this. And even though it was a passion. So I went back home to New Jersey, where my parents lived, and started looking for sales jobs. And this is all on my own.
Where'd you grow up in New Jersey?
Well, I originally grew up in New York, but we moved to New Jersey in 1965 from Queens.
Okay.
But most of my adult life was in East Brunswick, New Jersey, central New Jersey.
Yeah. Route 18 or exit 18.
Exit 9.
Nine. Son of a guy. I knew it was a derivative of
yes, 18. Exit 9.
Chris, you're our Jersey boy. What are you doing?
I went to Rutgers and I went to... Yeah, I know East Brunswick, but I was a sub teacher at East Brunswick High School.
Yeah, that's
maybe I taught you, Michael.
That's where I graduated from.
I'm kidding.
I don't think you were around then.
I know it wasn't. No. What did you? I mean, you learned music, so I mean that's extremely. I feel like a lot of folks who I know who are in the music who learn are really really good at music, are good at math, and kind of see the world in like this kind of matrix sort of way, a different way than I see the world. What skill sets did you have to pick up when you got into commercial real estate that you just didn't have?
I think it was really more of the finance side of the business because I had, I think, a technical mind for learning real estate only from being, you know, 7 years of being in factories and selling technical products that engineers typically were into. So I think I grasped onto the real estate business pretty quickly. It was really more of learning, you know, about leases and cash flow and, you know, anything having to do with finance. And doing that for 12 years really helped me, you know, learn my craft because I did pretty much everything possible in the real estate business during those early years. There were no rules. There was no silos.
Good old days.
There was no silos. It was like sell a building, sell a piece of land, develop land, you know, sell an office building, lease an office. I mean, it didn't matter. The goal was to make money and transact. So, but I spent most of it in the industrial arena.
So if you were talking to your younger self about how, I assume that you probably think there are some shortcuts you could have taken to get to where you are. You know, we love to kind of put all this out there so that students who are trying to figure out what they want to be when they grow up can maybe get some nuggets of information. Any advice to those Montclair State University students or otherwise?
Well, I believe in, you know, following passion first. So do what you love, study what you love, and don't force yourself into something that, you know, if you're not into it right away, that you're going to regret. So I always tell people, I don't think it really matters what you do early, as long as you, you know, have a vision for where you'd like to go in the future. And you've got to take it, you know, step by step. Every day brings something different and opportunities present themselves and you have to make decisions. And, you know, it helps to have, you know, mentors or people to help you along the way, but you have to be able to make some decisions on your own. And,
right.
You know, and they're critical. So unless you're going to be a doctor or an engineer or something that's highly technical where you really have to go to school and follow a track, I don't think it really matters.
Tell us about Metrics Real Estate Services.
Metrics is a it's the name of a company actually that my wife came up with and started.
All right.
Again,
All right.
A lot of this happens.
Go get it.
Yeah, where is she? She's playing the cello.
She's around here somewhere. It actually started out as a kind of like a holding company for our brokerage licenses.
Mm-hmm.
So we're both of us have broker's license, so we didn't need to really work for anybody. So we needed a company where we could do that. And, you know, just in case, having a broker's license is a license to earn a living.
Mm-hmm.
And without it, you're just working for somebody else. So Metrics Real Estate came about by that. It really didn't do anything until 2017 when I left HFF and started the development business. So, you know, kept the name and went out and started the, you know, working on getting into the development business again.
Mm.
That wasn't the first time. But on my own, looking for capital partners, branding a little bit of the name, getting out there and telling the story about what I want to do and, you know, networking. And, you know, when you've been in the business a long time and you know pretty much everybody,
right.
What they want to know is, do you have a track record? What was it like doing business with Michael Nechampkin over the years? And does he have the capital? Can he get the capital? And, you know, it all came together pretty quickly.
What is it like doing business with Michael Nechampkin? It's wonderful. What are you seeing as far as like deal flow now? Like, are you focused in Jersey and Pennsylvania or like any, like what are you seeing out there?
Yeah. Things have changed a little bit. For me and Metrics since the end of 2022. So I started in 2017, developed a number of properties and sold everything at the top of the market in 2022. That was basically April and May.
Mm-hmm.
Started in 2021, 22, and then kind of the market fell apart, started to fall apart as interest rates went up. There was a lot of questions on demand and, you know, what was going on and supply. So I took a step back. And since then, I'd say opportunities are far and few between. It's been very difficult. And now capital is back in a big way and the competition is fierce. So mm-hmm. I try to stay under the radar, looking for opportunities that suit me. I'm not an institutional developer for myself, but I'll develop for institutions. But it's got to be profitable. And it's becoming less and less profitable as a single person.
Right.
With a small team. I'm spending a lot of time on the advisory board of Altman Logistics Properties.
Yeah, tell us about Altman.
And so the president of Altman Logistics Properties is Mark Levy. Mark and I go back 20 years to my Prologis days, and I hired him to work for me in the Baltimore, Washington market. And that's how we started our relationship. And we, you know, that's carried along through, you know, his career. And so he started what was called BBX Logistics.
Yeah.
Prior to Altman a couple of years ago. He called me, he called another colleague of mine, Gene Preston. We all worked together at some point or other at Prologis. So there's a that's the connection. And he asked me to be on the board as they're starting to grow their company. So that's been for me a little, you know, year and a half working with them. I'm a general partner in the New Jersey developments with them. And so I'm staying in the business through investing directly with partner, but I'm not active as a developer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty easy to start the development process again for me with the right opportunities. And so what has changed going back to, you know, one of your past questions is that it's becoming harder and harder to get entitlements. And this is a problem not only in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and everywhere in the country. It's, you know, it's the NIMBY mentality. And so it's become very, very difficult. And I would rather look at fully entitled, ready-to-go properties where all you have to do is, one, have the capital and have your team together, and you can, you know, start to develop right away. So it saves a lot of time. I don't have 2 years of time to go through those processes again. It's pretty painful. Everybody thinks it's easy. It's not.
Yeah.
Seeing some of those community groups, they are not gentle.
Exactly. And you know, while you're going to be, ultimately, you may be successful. In most cases, it, you know, generally works out. You still have to go through all of that. And you have to sit there and you've got to take the abuse and the delays. And, you know, time is money. And so it's actually easier just to buy, you know, fully entitled property that's fully baked, pay a little bit more for it, get a permit, start going. So that's my strategy right now for metrics. And Altman is back to Altman. They're in South Florida. We closed on two office buildings in New Jersey that are getting knocked down to build industrial.
Wow.
One in Parsippany, one in Hamilton. And they're getting very aggressive in New Jersey, and then, you know, basically in the Mid-Atlantic, then all the way down to South Florida. So it's a real growth story, and it's Altman Logistics, which is now part of the Altman companies. It's a pretty big private organization. They own manufacturing companies, retail companies, a lot of real estate development businesses, and now the logistics business. So that's where I fit in.
Awesome. Well, if you think the entitlement process is hard, welcome to the hot seat.
Oh!
It's going to get even harder.
It gets worse.
Yeah, you think entitlements is bad. This is really bad. But much quicker, thankfully.
That's right. So do you have any books or podcasts that you might recommend? I feel like I was trying to think if there was something I was going to tie into you being a musician, but I'll leave that to you.
One of my favorite podcasts is Hidden Brain.
Oh yeah.
So Shaka Vidada leads that one, and my wife Julie turned me on to that one. She's a big podcast listener.
Mm-hmm.
They share ideas and concepts about your personal well-being, your life stories, how different things affect different things. It's really interesting. So, and they cover all kinds of topics. you know, from the good to bad. But Hidden Brain is actually, that would be my favorite.
I think I have that one on my list there, but it requires a brain.
Exactly.
Some people's brains are much more hidden than others.
I'd be listening to that. Sounds right up my alley.
What do you have? Like we're busy folks. I'm sure, you know, different times in your life, you're busier than others. Like, what has been a grounding routine? Or it sounds like you seem like a pretty calm guy. Like, do you have do you meditate? You seem like a meditator. Maybe I'm off there. You run, or you're a runner?
You get the same vibe.
Or you play piano. Is that like your
there you go.
Your thing?
That's it. So piano is my meditation. You know, day to day, you know, I get up pretty early, you know, 6:30, have a glass of water first thing, drink a glass of water.
I thought you were about to say, I have a glass of scotch.
A glass of scotch. That could have been my great grandfather or something like that.
Yeah.
And this is kind of like the standard routine, like a glass of water. Then I have a cup of green tea matcha, and then I go to the gym.
Oh.
And you know, work out for about, 45 minutes to an hour, and come back and have breakfast and start my day. And then piano kind of fits in there depending upon if I'm home or I'm not home. So if I'm home, I'll spend, an hour at least a day playing the piano.
That's awesome. You should move to California, Michael. You fit right in. Come on out.
I know. That's the lifestyle I want. That's amazing. You should go out to California. You'd love it.
He's brought California to Princeton.
Right. That's
matcha,
true.
Water, gym. It's not like cigarette, coffee, and
the lifestyle of a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I assume that throughout your career, you've had certain mentors that have developed you. Would love to hear a little bit about how maybe you've been developed by some mentors and maybe how you've mentored others.
Yeah, this is that's one of the harder ones.
That's why they call it the hot.
Yeah, come on, Michael. What do you think?
So I'd say,
what do you think's going on here?
I'd say when I started in the business, in the real estate business, the only person that really helped me along was the Cushman & Wakefield managing officer, Don Eisen. He's now, in his mid to upper 80s. He might be close to, I think he's in his 80s. He's retired now. But he hired me. He brought me along. When I wanted to do something different, I'd go to him, and he helped me along. He's the one that actually got me into Security Capital Industrial Trust. Because I originally told him that I didn't want to be a broker for the rest of my life.
Right.
And when that call came from my other mentor, Walt Rakowich, he introduced me, and that was the start of another career. And so, for Don Eisen, the brokerage business, Walt Rakowich was a regional manager in Ohio. At Security Capital Industrial Trust, went on to become the CEO of Prologis, and a couple of times. And he was instrumental in my learning development business and other things in life. So
yeah,
those are two key people for me.
I love that. Good ones.
And as far as me mentoring, I've had relationships with so many people. I can't say that there's any one specific person. I'd say there's many people along the way that I've tried to help and encourage. So
you're part of the university board here, which is we pay a lot of money, but you still do it.
That's right.
So you obviously have a desire to help other folks.
I do, and more so at this stage in my life. One of the other things that I do along with my wife is we set up a endowment at Ohio University School of Music to help music students with their tuition and other things as they get through their education. So that's one of the things that I do to give back.
I love that. That's awesome. Now you mentioned you hired Mr. Levy from Altman at one point. So what, I mean, if someone was coming, what skill sets do you have you look for over the years when you're hiring someone? Because I assume some of these people listening to this podcast are looking to, you know, get into the industry or be in the industry or advance in the industry. What skill sets would you encourage them to acquire?
Well, I'm not sure that they need to acquire that, but they need to be honest to begin with. And I think you can get that pretty quickly when you're talking to somebody or mm-hmm. with somebody. There's too much. I'm not going to say it's dishonesty, but people aren't honest with themselves, and you got to own up to things and take responsibility for the things that you do. So I think that comes out. Somebody who's a self starter. When I'm working with somebody, you know, I know how I was. Like, I took things onto myself. You know, I went after things. You know, once in a while, I would need some guidance. And you want to collaborate with other people if you have a team or whatever. But I think, you know, being a self-starter, being open to new ideas is critical. So I think those are key aspects that I would look for
uh-huh.
and have looked for. And somebody, you know, somebody who is basically giving you a lot of BS, you can get that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, and we're all guilty of to some extent, but can't run your life.
Yeah. Well, Michael, it was great to get to know you better. Thank you for participating and volunteering with the board. And
pleasure.
Have a great holiday season, man.
Thanks. You all too. Great to see you.
Let's play us out with a song. Play us out with a song.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Love it. This is going to be the best podcast.
This is going to be our theme song.
Let's see.
There's only women in the world to me.
Let's see. I'll just give you a little.
Okay.
That was beautiful.
Was that your, what song was that?
It's a shorter version of a Gershwin prelude.
Oh, I love it.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, you got to come to our holiday party on the 19th. Bring your piano.
Chris will bring his guitar.
And a tip jar.
Yeah. Right. Thank you very much.
Well, it was great seeing you, Michael. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Resume. a Jackson Lucas podcast, where we take a deep dive into the career journeys of some of the top minds in real estate and equip you with the knowledge to move forward in your path towards the success you've envisioned. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to Beyond the Resume. Be grateful for your support. All episodes of Beyond the Resume are brought to you by Jackson Lucas, building inclusive and diverse businesses through talent acquisition. Visit us at jacksonlucas.com.